Warning! The following is intended for mature audiences. It includes references to the use of illicit substances as well as crude humor. Listener discretion is advised. Well, tell them why they shouldn't listen to this show, guys. Johnny? Johnny, where are you? Johnny, come in! Who's out there?
Huh? What?
Jay Jinx, is that you?
Huh? Yeah, oh, well, hey, how's it going? Am I on the podcast?
Oh, yeah, you're on the Warpod. Why?
I didn't realize I was going to be here this week. How's it going?
Pretty good, but I can't find Johnny.
Huh. I thought I saw him getting a midnight snack a few minutes ago.
Midnight snack, eh?
Anyway, how's it going?
I mean, I've been better. Johnny's missing. Quick, check the scanners.
Oh, actually, I do see something here.
What is it?
It's a... looks like a distress call? Audio only.
Patch it through.
What button is that?
It's, okay, it's quarter circle forward and kick. I know that's weird, but it's that.
Forward? Oh, whatever. Okay, there.
This is Johnny Dim. Sending in a distress call. Sustained massive damage. Hull breach imminent. Oh god. Oh god, it's a war pod!
A war pod? That's impossible. Check for coordinates.
It says it's buffering. I'm getting that beach ball thing.
Beach ball thing? Somebody uploaded a new OS.
I don't think that's how... Anyway.
Quick, check for updates!
No, never check for updates.
Are you telling me we're not going to be able to get his coordinates?
Not until it's done buffering.
Oh. Well, in that case, you want to do a podcast?
Okay, sure.
Greetings and salutations, America! I'm Zach Nanimus.
I'm Jay Jinx.
And you've just tuned into the Warpod, part of the Space City Nerd Network. Remember that if you like our stuff, you can check us out at warlocks:gamesandbeer on YouTube, and check out our Twitter, which is @warlocksbrew. Also, we have a little Facebook page that we would love for you to stop by and check out. Tonight, we are going to be talking about Final Fantasy F-Zero.
It's time zero.
You shut it. How the X-Men are taking it back to the 90s. Also, Jay Jinx once again is going to school us on the new D&D version 5 Mega Dungeon. We're going to talk about our personal Kickstarter picks, Wonder Woman's brand new pants, and because we're talking about Wonder Woman's pants, we are going to be talking about our top three and bottom three pants of all time! But first, I know this has been long anticipated. I know that I haven't said much about it in the past because we hadn't played. But the Pasadena Gaming Group once again delved into the Emerald Spire. So it's time for me once again to chronicle the adventures of Phineas Gray, Paladin unto Avadar. Jay Jinx, you excited? The opening blurb is done now.
Okay.
I forgot to mention that I was going to give that huge tirade of stuff.
I didn't even know what you were talking about when you were talking about Phineas Gray. So.
Oh, Phineas Gray is... You know what? I'm glad that you're here because I bet you have... Whoa. I bet you have about as much context for it as anybody does.
It's probably true.
The Emerald Spire segment is something that we introduced when we started playing the Emerald Spire. I was Jay started running it, and mm-hmm. I was pretty not Jay Jinx, Jay Riz.
I know you're talking about.
Well, yeah, I was talking for the kitties at home.
Oh.
Ah.
Them kitties.
All those cats that listen to our show, just confused, and every time we scream, they run out of the room. Causing dozens of dollars in property damage. Either way, Phineas Gray. Jay started running the Emerald Spire Super Dungeon, 16 floors, each floor written by a different dude. And we started talking about what's actually happening to my character, Phineas Gray, Paladin of Avadar, conscripted to the great Sir Thaddeus Wessex.
Sounds like a pretty interesting D&D character.
And my job is to prove, because I'm a paladin hospitaller, my job is to prove myself a worthy squire. to Sir Wessex by keeping my party alive as they travel through the spire.
Hmm. Seems like you'll probably emerge more powerful than him.
Oh, I probably already am. But either way, we...
Prove your squirehood by defeating a great worm dragon. Then you shall be below me still, I guess.
Then you will be worthy to do all of my work for me. But, okay, so this past weekend, we traversed levels 4 and 5 of the Emerald Spire. Nice. And level 4, we found our first, I, the person with the best fortitude save in the group, decided to go ahead and roll a 3 on my fortitude save.
Nice.
So I'm the paladin, and I was the only one who was sickened by what we would soon realize was troglodyte stench. Hmm. And for those of you at home who aren't familiar with D&D or Pathfinder, troglodytes are a race of humanoid lizards that breed in, and consume filth. And as a result, their very aura is noxious. And yes. We went down there expecting a fight, and we met Sklach. And Sklach was a troglodyte, and he was very nice. And he was the ambassador to a people that worshipped a huge magnet in the middle of the dungeon. And because...
Neat.
They called it the God in the Box. And we... because my character is an uber paladin, I've literally done nothing in initiative before because nobody has done an evil or aggressive action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all been my party members starting fights, and I've, like, not done anything. Because except for I will heal them, which is what they need most of the time anyway. We'll get into that. So I've taken it upon myself to speak to every NPC as quickly as possible because I know my party members will kill them. And he was like, "Oh, welcome to our great realm. We worship the God in the Box. Do you have sacrifice?" And I was like, "What form does this sacrifice need take?" And they were like, "Iron." And we were like, "Great. We killed iron cobras a few levels ago. We'll just give you their corpses."
Nice.
And that was enough. And we got full XP, which we actually got into a debate about. And I wanted you to weigh in on this one. It wasn't a debate amongst us. We all totally got it. But I guess on Pathfinder forums, which I rarely hit up, because I'm usually homebrewing,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not even running a Pathfinder right now. Apparently, lots of people, a good chunk of people on the forums, believe that if you use negotiation tactics to bypass parts or entire dungeons, you should get half XP. How do you feel?
I think, okay, so here's how I feel. I feel it really is contextual.
Okay.
To what's going on in the scene. Because, like, those guys right there, they very well didn't... There was an obvious role-playing way to end the encounter, right? So... I think you should reward your players with full experience if they decide to take the role-playing way out of the encounter because it was offered to them, and they took it. All that happens if you give them half XP for that is they start fighting everything.
That's exactly what I thought.
And in that instance, I totally would have given them full experience. Now, in the instance of someone somehow has some crazy ability to... charm or just has a crazy high diplomacy or a class ability that allows them to literally talk people out of things all the time, then I'd start looking at maybe half XP if they were starting to do every encounter being ended by social means, if that makes sense.
For that, I just GM fudge it.
Yeah.
That didn't work because I would like this session to go a different way than all previous sessions have gone.
Yeah, so, and that's the thing, but in that instance where, you know, they were given an obvious role-playing, you know, like, out, then heck yeah, reward that crap.
Well, since you decided to give me a flip-floppy non-answer, give me the rule of thumb. No context. If you had to ask point blank, and you do have to say yes or no.
Yes or no?
Half XP or not.
I'd rewardful.
Rewardful as a rule of thumb? Unless
I would.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I thought. And the thing, it's weird. Like, from a gameplay perspective, full XP makes plenty of sense. From a role-playing perspective, I think half XP actually makes sense. Because, you know, you're not going to be... let me restate. As Pathfinder or D&D characters, we learn combat abilities as we gain experience.
Mm-hmm.
In general, I would have to say that the vast majority of the things you learn make you better at killing things,
mm-hmm.
or not being killed by things. And talking your way out of stuff doesn't make you a more effective warrior. That being said, it is very real bull for you to award half XP when they outdid your dungeon.
Yeah.
So I'm more concerned with, in that respect, I am more concerned with the gameplay aspect versus the role-playing aspect.
Absolutely. Well, you have to realize that D&D is a game, and that
yeah.
you can't... People try and argue endlessly for realism, 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 and it's just, in the end, you're playing a game, and the game needs to come first as far as just complexity and
good feel go. Well, fun needs to come first.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I said. It needs to come first in terms of good feel.
Yeah.
Like, if the game is bogged down and boring, no one's having fun. Realism or not.
Yeah, and we definitely had fun with that one, especially since we were able to just offer up corpses.
Yeah, no, that sounds totally cool to me.
And it turns
out... Being a GM, I would be totally happy if that happened in my game.
Turns out that their god in the box was giving them real stuff.
Hmm.
There was a well, which we could only assume there was, like, the troglodytes knew nothing. We could only assume that there was a decanter of endless water at the bottom of this thing, because they were constantly refreshed by water. And they also had this vat, which Jay Riz described as being full of pink, viscous liquid.
Mm-hmm.
When it's viscous, does that mean it's getting closer to solid, or is that aviscous?
No, viscous means it's getting thicker and thicker.
Okay, so yeah, viscous, pink viscous fluid that gave off a horrifying stench.
Ugh.
And he said that this never, Splach said this never runs out either. So that's when we invented a new wondrous item, decanter of endless meat. or flesh.
Gross.
So we gave him the iron. We went to level 5. We found what we could only assume was a summoner who had a crab-like eidolon,
mm-hmm.
who said, "Get out of here. You're interfering with my work." And I was like, "We do not wish to interfere. We simply wish to pass. We will do so as quietly as possible. And if it is a question of research, we have many magicians with us who may be able to." He was like, "Shut it! Roll initiative!" And... then we killed him, and that's when the water started.
Hmm.
This whole area was flooded. Like, it started just around our knees, and before long we were wading waist high, and there was a current that was going to suck us over this little wall, and that was the only way to get through without needing potions of water breathing. And
mm-hmm.
we told our two strongest party members, "Hey, we'll tie you off." And... they said, "Nah, that's okay," and jumped over without further discussion, which
nice.
started a battle with it's like a mud demon.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, it's essentially a water and an earth elemental.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, they fought one of those in my Rise of the Ringlords game. I know
yeah.
what you're talking about.
Yeah, so you know they're a huge pain in the ass.
Yes,
and
they are.
They can grapple and engulf and still
yes.
be able to attack. And we were doing this. On the other side of the waterfall, the water is 8 feet deep.
Nice.
Yeah, so they couldn't even fight. So because I'm there just to keep people alive and defend them when necessary, the two casters who were with me, I was like, help me out of my armor. Because I was going over the side too. And
you gotta love people that their first reaction is, well, the DM says it's there, we must go. Like,
well, it's they were over there, so I had to do something.
No, but I'm just talking about them. The
oh, yeah.
That just jumped in.
I have to say it was good on Luke, because we rarely talk about Luke on the show, America, but he's a very pragmatic guy. But when it comes to role playing, he's actually really good. And the strength. His character, simply named the Strangler, we do not know his real name, is incredibly impulsive and doesn't like to wait on things. For example, when I got sickened by the troglodytes, it would have only taken me a minute to recover, and this wasn't an initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I'm going. And I was like, well, I have to try and keep you alive as best I can, so I had to lay on hands myself and burn it. So, needless to say, we all almost died.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason we didn't is because one of the casters gave me their crossbow, which prompted me to not jump over the side, and I got a better idea of what was going on, even though my crossbow bolts couldn't hurt it. So I went back and just threw rope over the side to pull people back up. And however, they did chip it to death in the process of us evacuating. And it was at this point that we decided that the spire had defeated us.
Nice.
Yeah. Which we said we're wasting more money than we're getting trying to overcome the things that are in our way to get money.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, this really isn't worth it anymore. And I was like, I'll follow you guys. My job is to keep you alive. Whatever. And luckily, in the Emerald Spire contains two towns, Fort Inevitable and Thorn's Keep.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Thorn's Keep module.
Oh, cool.
And so now the thing that I've always wanted in tabletop RPGs is happening.
What's that?
We have a consistent party that's adventuring in a larger sandbox-style world that goes through modules for the purpose of going through another one. Essentially, we're going off to grind. And I've always wanted that. That's the experience I've always wanted. That, you know, I have my character. And my character has many adventures. He wasn't built for this one module. He wasn't built for this one campaign. He is my character. And he endures in my adventures. I think that's cool.
Neat.
Yeah, so we're going off to Thornkeep.
Cool.
I think it's cool. I don't want to see what's cool. Hey! Jenkins.
Yes.
I think it's cool.
All right, so as a segue off of that, actually, I had something I wanted to talk about.
Well, we're out of time, so.
Every time. Wah.
Summertime. What is that song?
Summertime and the Living is Easy.
No, it's basically all just a funky beat, and then every once in a while they go like summertime.
No, I know what song you're talking about.
And that's the song that, and that's what it's called.
I don't know.
Oh God, we're 20 minutes in. We're never gonna talk about pants. All right, go on. Elemental nation.
Elemental evil. Yeah. So.
What is? Tell the kids.
Shut up, and I'll do it. The kids that aren't supposed to be listening. So Dungeons & Dragons is actually coming out with a new product here. And on April 7th, they're releasing their next big adventure called Elemental Evil. And the reason it made me think about it is because, kind of like the Emerald Spire, it's a big mega dungeon. The adventure, Princes of the Apocalypse, is going to take characters from level 1 to 15.
Okay.
So... it's gonna be pretty neat.
Hold on, wait. And, so is Princes of the Apocalypse? Does that feed into Elemental Evil?
Well, that is the name of the adventure, and it encapsulates the Temple of Elemental Evil as well as some extra stuff.
And some of that extra stuff is gonna take you all the way to level 15.
Correct. Well, just the original Temple of the Elemental Evil took you, I think, from 1 to 15.
I'm sorry, I'm a little confused. So how does Princes of the Apocalypse, what is it to Elemental Evil?
Princes of the Apocalypse is a big adventure. Elemental Evil is the overarching I guess, I can't, like, the overarching storyline, I guess, because they're releasing a board game, they're releasing an expansion for the Neverwinter MMO, they're releasing the adventure for D&D, and they're also, they released a player's packet for the adventure. So it's kind of like an overarching storyline that's covering the whole brand. Kind of like when they did Civil War, any of those overarching storylines that covers in the entire Marvel universe or whatever.
Okay, so Elemental Evil is to the Princes of the Apocalypse as Marvel Civil War is to Marvel Civil War Armistance, Storm and Black Cat's Wedding.
Sure, there you go.
Or Black Panther.
Black Panther. I'd see Storm and Black Cat get married. I'd be okay with that.
the thing is like, it's like, oh yeah, I'd watch them get married.
Is that why the Civil War is happening? They're trying to get married.
Like the are you telling me that Captain America was actually just fighting for LGBT rights?
Yes, and like the Southern gentleman he is, Tony Stark was starkly against.
Anyway. Bucky deserves to have happiness too.
Anyway, off of that, Jesus. But yeah, so basically, Prince of the Apocalypse coming out, and the main thing I actually wanted to talk about was actually the player's packet. As well, the adventure is going to be really cool. The player's packet is what, in my opinion, more people are going to care about because it's a free download that they're offering through DriveThruRPG.
Ooh.
And yeah. And it comes with four new races. That's the Arakoa, which are like flying bird people. The Ganassi, and it actually goes through each type, fire, water, air, and earth.
Cool, okay, yeah.
The Goliaths are back, as well as, and they're much less broken than they were in 3.5.
I didn't know what an original one was. Okay. Lay it on me, stud.
Once I finish this, what was the last one? Oh, the Smurf Neblin, the Deep Gnomes.
Oh,
got the
God.
Back in.
No.
So.
Put them away.
Why?
Put them back in the toy chest.
Anyway, but it's a free packet. It comes with those four races, and then it comes with, I want to say, around 70 new spells. So, like, a ton of new spells for all the classes. So... It's the fact that that's free is like a big deal, and so it shows that Wizards is like kind of modernizing their concept of how they're doing RPGs as far as digital releases and stuff.
Okay, considering, do you think that it's a ploy to say, hey, we're gonna have cool stuff online? Check out start searching us on DriveThruRPG.
Absolutely.
Do you think it's possible that, considering the market share that Pathfinder has, they're trying to say, hey, D&D gives you free stuff?
Well, what they're doing is, Pathfinder gives out free players packets as well, and that has just shown great success, so Dungeons & Dragons is emulating that.
See, I've only ever been exposed to one player packet, and that was for Spire. No, cool. Actually, this was cool. Our buddy, nice guy Shane, he gave us. He actually built his own player's packet for his homebrew, mm-hmm. which had custom talents in it.
Yeah, well, Iron Gods, a character I made not too long ago, and the player's packet for that included like. Three new subclasses and a host of feats and some new spells and stuff.
Okay, how many more spells can there possibly be?
Never enough. Never enough.
Well, it's like how many things can you actually do? You can buff stats for which they have everything. You can increase damage, nerf damage, nerf numbers. Okay,
notice though that a few of the spells are staples and they do exactly what you're saying, and that the new spells that come out tend to be more and more specialized. So they either A, are overpowered and get picked all the time, or don't get picked very often.
Because they're too circumstantial?
Correct.
It's
because the base spells that were released do exactly what you're saying. Deal damage in an area, deal damage in a line. You know what I mean? Like
extra roll. Plus four on charisma modifier when in the next stall to a guy in a privy.
Correct, and that's a level one spell. And you're like, well, I'm going to take it. I plan to spend a lot of time in bathrooms.
Your focus is just a bunch of dry leaves. Hey, buddy, can you help a guy out? Why, sure. You never told me what a Goliath was.
Okay, so Goliaths are basically, in the vein of races that hail, like, bloodline-wise from other things, kind of like Tieflings, Asimar, Ganassi, all that.
Many moons ago, your grandma got funky with a construct.
Yeah, well, this one actually is giants. Goliaths are giant, plane-touched, or whatever you want to call it. So they have the blood of giants in them. In 3.5, they came with an ability that let them wield one size category larger weapons. And so they were an absolute favorite of power gamers.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they have lost that. So
That'd be like Goliath the Druid would be my favorite right there.
Goliath barbarians were just absolutely everywhere.
Well, it's nice to have like that significant boon to something that your character doesn't normally do. Mm-hmm. So like you're out of spells, and it's like, well, here's my colossal greatsword.
If I remember right, I think my brother's barbarian was a Goliath back in your game. So,
dude, crazy possible. There was a lot going on in that game.
Yeah. So anyway, that's all I had to say. Go to DriveThruRPG, look at the player's handout for Elemental Evil. Comes with 4 free races, 70 free spells. Get it. If you really like it, buy the adventure. The last one was pretty decent. The starter set adventure for D&D 5th is actually really, really good. So if you're going to buy an adventure, pay $20, get dice, get an adventure. It's really good.
And, of course, if you are checking us out on SoundCloud or iTunes, head on over to warlocksgamesandbeer.com. Find this podcast on the website, and you will find links below.
There you go. Porn name for some reason, Links Below. Next up on stage, Links Below.
Hold on. Is this Links Below or Links Bellows? Because... Mm-hmm. That tells me whether or not I'm going to buy a ticket. That's horrifying imagery. Just you squeeze a guy that can squeeze his legs together, and just an awful lot of air just comes out of him.
So you wanted to talk about Wonder Woman's pants, or lack thereof, or new game thereof.
We're not getting into it yet, woman! And I'll tell you why. Because that's us talking about comic books. And we're not even going to start talking about comic books until we talk about how the X-Men are bringing it back to the 90s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that. My childhood was so pleased.
So for those of you who don't know, although we've talked about it on the show before, and that means you're not listening, Marvel's going to have a new Secret Wars coming out.
Big event.
For those of you who don't know, in 85. Now, in 1985, they had a story arc about the Beyonder, and he was a big douche, and he decided that he was going to take the world's greatest superheroes and supervillains and make them fight on a planet that he created specifically for this purpose called the Battle World. They brought the character back later on, where he was just trying to be a dude on Earth, and it wasn't really a Secret Wars, but whatever. And now they're going to do it again. And I don't have... Okay, do you have context for what the new Secret Wars is going to be about?
I honestly have no idea. I know that it has something to do with Skrulls, I thought.
Skrulls?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I bet the Skrulls tried to invade the Battle World.
Could be.
I will bet the 59 cents that Warlock's YouTube has made so far on the fact that the Skrull Empire found the original Battle World, invaded it, are doing a really good job somehow, and the Beyonder is picking up the greatest heroes of the Marvel Universe to come save his battle world.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I bet. But the teaser that they released, is something that's going to be a digital exclusive, which is called Secret Wars, X-Men 92, and the artwork harkens back to the original show.
Dude, that just that picture of Jubilee with the yellow 90s raincoat.
And the bubblegum.
Dude, it like, I was suddenly like 7 years old watching Saturday cartoons again.
Feel the wrath of the daughter of Bret Hart. I miss the Juggernaut.
Yep.
So, knowing what you know and having seen the teaser, I have my theory. Do you have a theory on why they're bringing back? Okay, from a marketing standpoint, I know why they're bringing back, why they're doing X-Men 92. It's because we're all older and have money.
It's true. Very true.
You know, that's why we haven't seen a Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends download, because those, you know, if you're old enough to have watched that show, you may not be interested in comic books anymore. But since our generation is in a suspended childhood, for what, which I think is cool, by the way, I'm not saying that is a negative thing. I think it's cool that more and more adults are interested in the Fantastic. But now that we have the money to blow on stuff like this, I think that's why they're doing it. Why do you think that? Then why do you think that they're bringing in the '90s X-Men from a thematic standpoint? Not even thematic, contextual to the story.
Because we don't even know who the Juggernaut is. He's the Juggernaut, bitch, oh. And he's the only one that can fight the Skrulls.
That ain't the Juggernaut. This is a Dodge. My suit's made of ketchup.
I can hardly breathe in here. Anyway, from a story standpoint?
Yeah, like, why and how X-Men from the 90s?
I honestly have no idea.
Okay, like, let me throw this at you.
Hmm?
Real quick, because I don't know how up to date you are on the Jubilation Lee story.
Okay.
But
I am not up to date. Go on.
Last time I checked, Jubilee was a vampire.
What?
On M-Day, she lost her powers and was later bitten by a vampire.
Hmm.
And the M-Day stuff still hasn't reversed itself. It's still going on as lots of mutants do not have powers.
Interesting.
So, as it stands, Jubilee should be undead, and clearly she's not in the artwork that we see.
Correct.
Knowing that, what do you think's going on?
I mean, it may have something to do with wanting to get the mutants back that have powers. I mean, if he's having to go into the past to get mutants that have powers, like maybe he's looking for a particular one, that could be something.
You know, for Jubilee, that kind of makes sense because I was doing some research on her because she always gets such a bad rap for like being like powerless and worthless.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, but the thing is that...
she the Dan Hibiki of the X-Men?
No. No, she is not. If there's a Dan Hibiki, it's Skin.
Okay.
Have you heard of Skin?
Yeah, I know who Skin is.
Yeah. No, okay, so her ability from a scientific standpoint is she is able to create ignited plasmoids.
Okay.
Essentially balls of plasma that she can manipulate with her mind. So she can just let loose like a huge field of balls of superheated plasma and then concentrate them on one person instantaneously.
Hmm.
It's been suggested that as far as energy projection is concerned, she may be one of the most powerful mutants in the world.
You know, that's what everyone says about every mutant, though, so, except for Skin. So I'm not going to take I'm going to take that with a large grain of salt.
Well, they don't say that about Scott.
I have heard more than once that if Scott didn't have a head injury, he could be one of the most powerful mutants in the world.
Well, he'd
like, I have heard that.
Who told you that?
I've just seen it in more than one place.
It's just
one of the things, his characters come and go. You know, that kind of thing comes up.
What about the fan favorite Wolverine? No one's ever suggested that he may be the strongest mutant in the world.
That's true.
And in fact, they actually... it was in... why can't I think of his name? Everybody loves him. He invented Firefly.
Joss Whedon.
Yeah, in Joss Whedon's run, Wolverine actually admits to not being able to fight Shadowcat.
Hmm.
She says like she's gonna she like invites him jokingly to like bring it on, and mm-hmm. he's like, "No, you'll go all ninja on me. I can't take that kind of hurt."
All ninja, nice.
Which actually, now that I know more about Shadowcat because I'm having to run a game with her in it, I learned that he may have been referring to the fact that she was taken over by a ninja. She was possessed by one, so she has like all of these extra ninja skills. Either way, so you're thinking that he's going into the past specifically to find mutants of a certain power level?
That just seems to me like something Marvel would do.
I got a feeling, and some of this may have to do with the fact that our theories are too similar, so I'm going to talk directly out of my ass for a moment.
Okay.
I got this feeling that for this Secret Wars, because the Beyonder has more context for what it is to be human, because that's like what all that's what Secret Wars 2 was about, was him learning what humanity was.
Mm-hmm.
I think with his infinite cosmic power, he is going to create his own heroes to fight.
Interesting.
And I think that he's going to be using outdated information for who and what these characters are in order to build them. So he'll essentially...
That sounds awesome, actually.
He'll be like, I need superheroes. Where do you find superheroes on Earth? Fox Network! Fox Kids! He'd be like, yes, those!
Suddenly we'll have stuff like the Hulk from the UPN TV show, or Captain Simeon and the Space Monkeys. I'll take it.
Oh, man, and someone might take Doc Samson serious for a second or two.
Okay.
I couldn't believe that when I first read it. Because the first time I saw Doc Samson was when Marvel Legends was doing a specifically Incredible Hulk run. Mm-hmm. And I saw Doc Samson, and I was like, oh, that's weird. Who's Doc Samson? And I looked him up. He was like, he had gamma radiation, and except it's all in his hair. So if he loses his hair, he loses his Hulk.
Yep.
Oh, Stan Lee. You crazy son of a bitch. He really is a weird guy. Did you see, what was it, Key and Peele's sketch about Stan Lee?
Yeah.
Heyday, a superhero who is always referencing his past. Dr. Balance, a man with four mechanical legs, so he never slips and falls in the shower.
Stanley, you're like 112. Oh, he actually is in his late 80s, I think. By the way.
He is, and that was like with Leonard Nimoy passing and everything, I was working on something, and Jay Riz was over in the bed, and she just went, and, like, immediately I turned around and was like, what? What? Is it Shatner? And she was like, no, it's Terry Pratchett. Which, by the way, guys, Terry Pratchett, author of the Discworld series, did pass away. And that is very sad. We once again this year have lost an incredible talent to the sands of time.
The sands of time, they're powerful.
They are.
Anyway.
Did you ever read any Discworld stuff?
Nope.
Discworld's really cool, and I'll tell you why. Because when I first started getting into writing, I was heavily inspired by The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I wanted to do something similar where I take the magnificent and awe-inspiring and make it funny. Mm-hmm. And I thought fantasy, and I racked my brain, and I couldn't think of anything that actually makes fantasy funny. Terry Pratchett makes fantasy funny. Laugh out loud funny. And nice. That's saying something for me in a book. Because books, for me, a book needs to be very good to elicit a reaction from me. And these books do. Because in the Discworld, it's kind of high fantasy in a weird way. Essentially, everybody lives on the Discworld, which is actually balanced on the backs of four tremendous elephants, all of which stand on the back of a turtle.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like actual mythology going.
Yeah, and they the Discworld is sort of, I think personally, and I don't know if it's been addressed in the book, I think it is the center of the multiverse, that all concepts actually originate in the Discworld. For example, all of their guardsmen are like Roman centurions, but the city never pays for anything, so their sandals are made out of cardboard.
Nice.
Their currency is U.S. dollars, represented by coins that contain as much gold as your average cup of seawater.
Nice.
Which is what, in one of the first books, you meet a guy from a far off land who actually has pure gold coins, and one of his coins can make you the richest man in Discworld.
Nice.
But it's actually pretty funny stuff. Man, it is very sad that he passed.
Have you ever read novels?
Say that again, you cut out.
Have you ever read any of the Xanth novels?
I haven't. Everybody's been telling me to read Xanth novels, and I never did.
It's a very similar thing. He takes fantasy, and he kind of turns it on its head.
Who is it?
His name is Piers Anthony.
Piers, okay, yeah.
He makes a whole lot of puns and things, and it's generally a good time when you read those books. They're really good.
When you say puns, like, now I'm imagining Piers Anthony. He's about 108, and he's wearing slippers in a big armchair, and he's just doodling on a scroll, and he's like, then he shielded himself with his shield.
No, puns more like, you know how we have centipedes?
Yes.
Well, they have nickelpedes and dimepedes, and they take chunks out of your flesh. About the size of the currency, otherwise.
Can I just say that before I knew what a dimepede was, I assumed that it was some sort of cough suppressant and fever reducer that you feed to children in the form of a bug.
But anyway, they just have stuff like that. They have like shoe trees and pillow bushes and all sorts of... He basically just makes a really wacky fantasy world.
No, I would pay an undisclosed amount of money for pillow bushes. One, from a literal standpoint, they sound comfortable. Mm-hmm. Two, from a the movie Carrie standpoint, they sound sexy. Either way.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard the word sexy and the movie Carrie in the same sentence.
Okay, remember the original actress for Carrie? I can't think of her name right now. Not Hit Girl from the new one.
I know what you're talking about. I don't remember.
I thought she was pretty cute.
I was too busy watching her murder everybody.
Oh, and she's a great actress too.
When I go online and I go to the dating websites and I'm like, what am I looking for today? I don't put in like homicidal kineticist.
You know, the thing is, if Carrie had a legitimate boyfriend, he wouldn't have died at that prom. I feel like that needs to be the top priority of all of your J-date services. Kineticist capable of destroying the entire world? Yes, I'd like to get on her good side.
Fair enough.
No, we will not be visiting any butcher shops. Issa Vey, now that we've talked a little bit about comic books.
Comics.
Thumpix. Jetix. Somebody stop me. I can't stop speaking.
I'm not going to do it. I'm going to let you just talk yourself to death.
4X. 445,000.
So, Wonder Woman's new pants.
Wonder Woman's new pants! I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit and let everybody at home know that how topics usually get introduced to the Warpod are that I send text messages to links to stuff that I think are kind of cool, and then I don't read them. So despite it being my idea, Jay Jinx is actually far more knowledgeable on the subject of the Princess of Themyscira's new attire. So take it away, Jank Jinx.
I read two articles. I might as well be a docent. Well, basically what happened was when they were debuting the new 52, they had some concept artwork out for Wonder Woman, and in one of the pictures she had pants. And so everyone was kind of going, oh man, are they gonna have Wonder Woman in pants? What? And it turns out, no, they kind of went back to the old leotard look with the leotard bottom. And but
having seen it, it's actually kind of classic and cool because lots of what they've been doing is harkening back.
Well, notice there wasn't a huge mucky muck made out of it. People were just kind of wondering if that pants was going to be the new thing. Just
people were just kind of wondering.
Wonder
Woman.
Anyway, so they have a new artist who went and I'm trying to find his name real quick. Blah, blah, blah.
Franz Ferdinand.
It's not Franz Ferdinand. David Finch, apparently, released a concept art, like a drawing of Wonder Woman, and she's in this awesome, like, battle gear.
Oh, yeah, the star-spangled kick the crap out of you?
Yeah, but it has this awesome pair of pants, and basically the people are sitting there going, like, that looks awesome, and they're just curious if that's going to be the new look of Wonder Woman. And
oh, so this hasn't been released in any comic books.
This is not out yet.
Okay, this is just concept from an artist who is linked to DC.
It's the new artist for Wonder Woman.
Okay.
And he released images.
And it okay, so that makes it... The thing is that... We talked about this, I think, last time on the show. Sometimes business hierarchy can ultimately lead to a person who uses rhetorical evidence to make decisions about things that happen in the company rather than actual evidence about how people feel about products being introduced. Mm-hmm. So for consistency, my fear is that they may just say, oh, that was cool. You're clearly capable of drawing her now. Now draw her in less. What do you think?
Oh, that's very possible.
Do you want the new suit?
Oh, yeah, it looks badass.
Guys, check for links below because I want you to see what we're looking at here.
Yeah, I mean, she has like these like freaking Assassin's Creed style, arm blades, and it looks really cool. And I'm not a huge Wonder Woman fan. I've never been really really into her, but I mean. It really does look neat, and her old suit, while it's classic and cool, I mean, I'd be down for crazy battle Wonder Woman.
Oh, every time I see crazy battle Wonder Woman, I'm always really excited. Like when we got Injustice Ultimate Pack for mm-hmm. free through PlayStation Plus. Sorry, I'm looking. I wanted to get a second look at her new stuff. Like, they released Wonder Woman Flashpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, she looks amazing. And she really does. And the thing is...
Is that
like,
the one where she's in the cool, like, leather jacket?
No, that was teasers for New 52.
Oh, was it? Yeah, because that costume looked awesome.
Just getting a lot of cosplay. And the thing is...
It's at the bottom of the thing you linked me.
I ain't even gonna look at a link.
Is that against your religion?
Hold on. All right, fine. I'll look at my own stupid link. I'm actually gonna have to edit this podcast. Bull. I don't care about PS1's new time. I don't care about Kristen Bell. That's a lie. I care about Kristen Bell.
Nobody cares about.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much what I remember, and she looks absolutely gorgeous. But no, every time I see every time I see Battle Woman, like who appears to be in armor and just ready to go, like I'm always super excited. And the thing is that I was talking to I was talking to Jay Riz about this last night, because she's all for every female superhero full costume battle gear. Like that's her thing. She thinks that the leotard look and stuff like that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I would like to say that not even male superheroes get the full costume battle gear. Freaking Superman's still in tidy whities in half of his comics, so.
What?
Superman still has that underwear outside of his costume look in some of his comics. So it's not even like male superheroes get the full battle gear.
Oh, and that was one point that I made that, you know, Even though you rarely see a lot of skin on male superheroes, mm-hmm. their costumes are always consistently skin tight. But female superheroes is one realm. Or the realm of female superheroes is one in which you are you're invited to show more of their body, But I think that has more to do... Okay, I don't think it has more to do, but I think it has something to do with female fashion in general.
It does.
Women... women wear knee-length skirts even in the office, you know, and it's a choice. Women today, it wasn't always like this, but women, there was a time where women were discouraged or sometimes not even allowed to wear pants in the workplace. Now it's now it's a choice, and many women still choose to show more leg. Many women still choose to have a lower neckline, and I think that. I think it's because it is a style that is available to them, which, while men could, it looks silly on us. And in the workplace, it's not even allowed.
Yeah.
As far as superheroes are concerned, one thing I did notice is that, there are a tremendous number of counterexamples for superheroines that do not show a lot. For example, Spoiler, who's covered from head to toe, every Batgirl, of which there are three.
Jubilee is wearing a giant trench coat, like.
But she's wearing a loose shorty shorts.
Oh, that's true. I forgot.
Yeah,
about
she's
that.
Got she's got the shorty shorts. I mean, who else? I think Star. It's either Star or Stripe from the DC universe. And when I was thinking about the ones who are actually showing a lot, usually they're the ones who are invulnerable.
Yeah, Spider-Girl. Spider-Girl has also always had full costume.
Yeah, but she's less vulnerable than your average bear. But she's not completely invincible. And also going back to the fact that male superheroes are usually in skin-tight stuff unless their adventures and power set require them to have more armor.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're talking about, like, big crisis story arcs, Batman is usually found in some sort of high-tech armor. But even if you look at his comics now, you're still looking essentially at an exaggerated male form.
Yeah,
and it is incredibly exaggerated, which is something that a lot of people like to talk about. Like, it's not a fair depiction of women in comics. It's also not a very fair depiction of men in comics.
True that.
Like, the only way to get that jacked up is steroids.
No, I mean, you can naturally do it. It's just hard.
It would literally take 100% of your time and wreck your kidneys.
Not particularly.
Yeah, because you'd be eating your body weight in protein every day.
You've never seen all natural bodybuilders? They can get big. Just, I don't know if they can get like Arnold Schwarzenegger big, but they can get pretty big.
All natural bodybuilders?
Yeah.
Are we talking bodybuilders or power lifters?
They can get those giant muscles.
Okay, but the thing is like
they just won't aspire to be a cloud.
With power. I do love that. Power lifters, and this is something that I learned recently, they develop very different physiques from mm-hmm. bodybuilders because, generally speaking, they are, not only are they lifting more weight, but their body actually reacts to them lifting that weight by putting massive muscles around their spine so they don't break themselves in half. And as a result, they appear to have kind of a gut. Even if that gut is made of steel, that's still what it looks like because the body's like, oh my god, this idiot's trying to kill us. Pack muscle around the spinal column.
Interesting.
And you rarely see that morphology in male superheroes. What you see is a bodybuilder,
not
a power lifter, which is what they would normally be.
And you're right, because when you look at power lifters, they all do kind of look husky.
They are. Husky's not a bad thing. Especially if you can roll a frying pan like a tortilla.
Dude, that's intense.
There's a guy who can do it. I don't know if we talked about it on the show.
No, I've seen the video of him doing it.
Oh yeah. Do you know why he can do it?
Why is that?
Okay. He literally has a superpower.
Oh really?
Yes. The mental synapses that are associated with the efficiency of using his muscles fire at a different frequency than ours. As a result, his muscles are used more efficiently.
Hmm.
He doesn't he's a mechanic. So like he's always doing, big manly heavy things, but he doesn't like live at the gym. He doesn't work on this stuff. He's just stronger than us.
I think I remember that because he was on an episode of Stan Lee's Superheroes,
yes,
right?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, that's right. That's where I saw it. So good show, by the way.
True believers. Okay. So final word on Wonder Woman's pants.
She can have them or not have them, but the new art looks pretty freaking cool. I would not be disappointed if it was canon.
Okay. Final word on female superheroes getting updates to where they're more clothed.
As long as Power Girl keeps her signature little heart thing, I think I'm ready to stand for anything.
I learned why that hole that she has there.
Mm-hmm.
That is a real kind of fashion thing. They're usually not that big, but I have seen other shirts with them. Usually they're about the size of like maybe 2/4,
Cool. Well, then she can keep it.
They're called keyholes. That's what that is.
Cool.
Also, would you like to see my vast collection of shoes and lipstick?
No, thank you. excuse me.
My final word. Wonder Woman. Originally, being Themyscira took a lot of cues from Greco-Roman society. Logically speaking, if she were to go into battle, she'd probably be completely nude. That being said,
that is untrue.
No, there were lots of just naked.
Sure, but even art we have from the period shows battle in some kind of armor, whether it still be legless. Like a lot of the men actually had. Even the men had armor that looks more like what Wonder Woman normally wears.
Yeah.
Like, they still had armor.
Maybe like a leather skirt.
Well, they had armor that was kind of leotardy. Like, they didn't spring for the leg stuff because it hindered movement.
Yeah.
And it was more expensive.
Okay, that being said, based upon the arena that Wonder Woman is usually fighting in and what she has become... I'm totally down with a full battle suit. It makes sense for her. As far as a more covered look in general, you got to go case by case because there's characters like Raven. I don't know that like body armor would affect her. Like she's just mystical.
It's true.
And I think that allowing female styles to be what they are, which allows for women to show off more of their form.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's appropriate in comic books. There are counterexamples of characters clearly not wearing enough.
Yeah.
Power Girl being one of them. There's no reason that she needs a keyhole that's literally the size of a dinner plate.
Hey, man. I want it. I want to keep it.
I'm not saying I don't find it attractive. I do find it a little offensive.
get over it.
So that's my final word on it. Case by case, and a little more modesty. They should be ready for work. They should be ready for an elegant dinner party at least.
Okay.
Which you get to show a lot in elegant dinner party. You can go backless and stuff.
True.
All right. And of course, we started talking about Wonder Woman's pantaloons for a specific reason. It's time for a top three!
Thank goodness.
That this podcast is almost over?
No, that I've been waiting to rail on my number one the whole time.
All right. Top three pants, not limited to comic books, not limited to video games, just top three pants. J. Jinx, why don't you start us off with your bottom three?
My bottom three. Well, actually, my bottom three come from real life.
They come from my real life puppies.
Hold on. Buttercup, what are you yelling at? What are you yelling at?
This is all going in.
Are you madam at the Warpod? Are you madam on the Warpod? All right. Anyway, mine come from real life. So I had a hard time coming up with three, because really and truly, I don't look at pants a lot. So
I don't wear pants a lot.
Yeah, so I actually have two, but my hatred for number one is so strong, it could be 1,000.
Nice.
So for number two, I'm just going to straight up say I have never seen the appeal in bell-bottom pants. I just don't get it.
Except for full ankle mobility.
Sure. So you can roll your ankle that much harder. All right, I get it. No, I never saw
maybe roll your ankle right into the club.
Like, even, you know, when I see people fashionably wearing them, I'm like, you look terrible. Lang?
Okay. Are we making a distinction between bell bottoms and flared bottoms?
Maybe. Not sure.
Because flared bottoms were all the rage in the 90s.
Maybe that may be more what I'm thinking. I'm not sure. It's the one where they puff out at the end, right?
Well, okay. Bell bottoms, like, I think some of them actually had a loose structure to, like, kind of like a skirt hoop to, like, actually keep them bell shape.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember seeing a lot of them that were always just perfect flares.
Sure,
down.
Sure. And I didn't really much care for them. Anyway, on my number one, though.
Well, hold on. And a flare bottom would collapse often.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay, don't know. Hold on. Before you get to number one, because of that epic preamble that you gave it, I have to venture a guess before you tell me.
Okay, go for it.
I'm going to say parachute pants.
It's not parachute pants.
All right.
I actually don't mind parachute pants. No, it's freaking JNCO jeans. And all of those terrible 90s gangsta jeans that people would wear halfway off themselves.
The ones that just had, like, they're essentially the antithesis of skinny jeans?
Yes!
Like, the legs are thick, the waists are broad.
It's just, oh my god. Like, they have to walk around like they're trying to take a crap everywhere because the pants are just going to fall off and they have giant pockets just begging to shoplift. Oh, it's the worst.
Okay.
Those things.
My exposure to JNCO jeans when I was a kid, because I didn't wear them, was mutual friend Cody.
Uh-huh.
He wore them all the time. The thing is that he's always been just a big, tall dude. And
true.
So he actually filled them.
True.
And so I never really got the whole saggy thing.
But that's because I lived in Pasadena for a while.
Okay.
And so I got all the saggy thing. And I saw more crack than probably South Houston. Like,
hold on. You saw more butt crack than South Houston saw crack rock.
Craig.
Nice. I don't care, honestly. I think my hate of skinny jeans allows for a special place in my heart for JNCOs.
Man, I don't know, man. It's not even JNCOs in particular. It's that big loose style.
Oh, just wearing
super popular. But JNCOs kind of like led the way. They were like the name brand that was tied to it. And like, it's just that style that was very popular in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it's just, every time I'd see one of those people, it would be like, just wear your pants. Just wear them like a normal person.
let me ask you something here.
What?
Did you read the original Secret Wars?
I have read the original Secret Wars.
Okay, so you're aware of, you know, considering the scale on which battles happen on Battle Worlds, you know, there is plenty of downtime.
Sure.
We may see a 90s X-Men suited out.
Oh my god.
So we may see some JNCO jeans. How is this going to affect if you see Wolverine sagging around the X-Men base?
Wolverine sagging around the action base.
Yeah,
I'm done. That's
You'll close your browser.
I don't know.
Right.
Actually, to be honest with you, I will probably chuckle at that because in any capacity, they're probably just pointing fun at it. Like,
you know what? I want to see. I want to see the sagging and, like, so you see his boxers, just big red maple leaf.
Nice. What about you, Zagnanimous?
Bottom three, Okay. Stretchy times. Number three, Batman's hockey pants. For those of you who may not have context for what I'm talking about, in the beginning of the second installment of the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy, Batman finds himself pitted against several Batman wannabes. He thereupon beats them and bat cuffs them and leaves them for the police. And one of them says, "What's so different about us? What gives you the right?" And he's like, "I'm not wearing hockey pants." And everybody thinks he said hockey pads, and many people just took it to face value. I have listened to that clip over and over and over again. That man is saying hockey pants.
Nice.
Fast forward to the third installment of that same trilogy, which I saw last night, just to confirm that it was a bad movie, because lots of people really loved it, and I really hated it, and it was on TV, so I was like, let me try it again. Maybe I was wrong. Mm-hmm. I wasn't. But there's a lot, in an extreme parallel to the first two movies, there's a lot of wide, brightly lit shots of Batman in that movie. And he is wearing hockey pants. They're like, it's supposed to be like this crazy, like bat armor, you know, it's supposed to be like he's spec ops and tech ready, you know, and he's wearing scuba pants. So Batman's hockey pants takes the cake because it's something incredibly laughable and stupid from the second movie, which is a movie that I absolutely love. And so It's a mar on that, and then made me actually look at his pants in the third one, which I hated as well. Number two, Robin pants. We got Batman pants and Robin pants on this one. Why was an 11-year-old Cape Crusader put in green briefs to fight crime?
Like he had the original booty shorts. I would like to point that out.
Yes.
Robin wore the original booty shorts.
And like, he serves as a parallel example to the exposure to female superhero skin that we were talking about at around the same era when Wonder Woman was made, and every single member of the Bat family since then has been fully covered. Every single one.
Mm-hmm.
He's the only, and I didn't understand it then. I don't understand it now. Can you help me? Because why? Okay.
Honestly, it was a thing of the times.
That 11-year-old boys just ran around in underwear.
Not in underwear, but those shorts were very, very 1950s. Very, very, very 1950s. Like, go watch Leave It to Beaver, just, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
It's time for a Warlock's Let's Search. Go to google.com and type in leave. Oh, by the way, go ahead and erase your search history after this. Leave It to Beaver booty shorts and see what we get. amazon.com. Oh, that's a it's a complete
that's
series.
That's something else. No, but like I'm just imagining it's all those like little boy school shorts that it looks very similar.
Okay. Type in 50s boys. By the way, typing this in is going to put you on a special government list. Just be aware.
Of course, the episode of Leave It to Beaver, I'm looking at, they're all wearing long pants. God damn it.
Boys shorts. I don't see it, dude.
I may be insane.
Yeah, I've got a Butterick printed sewing pattern. I mean, it's not at knee level, but it's not Robin.
That's true. I may be thinking of the knee shorts.
I think you may be thinking of pedophiles.
I might be.
Okay, the one thing I found was a grown man in tidy whities. All right, Issa Fae. All right, so I hate them even more because. Like, for a long time, I just told myself, oh, you know, they're athletic shorts, and, you know, he wants to do karate and stuff. No. 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 All right. Either way, still hate him. Number one, feather pants.
Feather pants.
Feather pants. Feather pants are the kind of pants that Daffy Duck wears.
Oh, yeah.
Not pants at all, but he acknowledges that he's naked when his shirt comes off.
Correct. No, it's not even that he acknowledges that he's naked. It's that we acknowledge that he's naked.
Well, I mean,
that's the crazy part.
Yeah. But, okay, he does, there are emblematic gestures that he does that show that, oh, I'm embarrassed. And then when he does this, when he loses his shirt, he blushes and covers the region that's been exposed the entire time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, Feather Pants is not exclusive to Donald Duck. Porky Pig wears Feather Pants. Let's see, Buster Bunny. Wears feather pants. It never ends. It never ends with the animal genitalia in children's cartoons. Can I get that on a t-shirt with my name and a quote? It never ends with animal genitalia in children's cartoons.
And that's gonna go right alongside the one that has. I think you're thinking about pedophiles.
that's the wallet that comes with the set.
Oh.
Go ahead, look for my wallet. It's the one that says, I think you're thinking about pedophiles on it. all right. Actually, interesting thing about the badass MF-er wallet.
Mm-hmm.
That prop came directly out of Quentin Tarantino's pocket.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was just like, oh, we need a wallet and just throw it in there. either way, J. Jinx. It's time. Top three!
Top three?
Top three.
Well, my third one's pretty simple. I'm just going to say blue jeans, just in general. Not even in comics, without comics. Just, they're super comfortable, and I love them, so I'm going to mention them. Number two.
This is an advertisement for American Cotton.
Correct. Number two is actually, it's actually not pants as much as it is underwear.
What?
That sounded really weird. But
I have been
Superman,
a staunch opponent
when Superman
underwear.
Started wearing actual pants and not that really stupid underwear outside of his pants look. Oh. I felt so happy for some reason because I've always hated that look. Like when the Superman Returns or whatever the newer one came out, he didn't have that, and I was so pleased deep down inside of me that he didn't have that stupid underwear outside of his pants look. That it's number two.
That's
absolutely
that took some getting used to for me, and
I could never stand it.
Okay, the thing is like. Why he started wearing them is because it was a convention of circus strongmen at the time.
Okay.
Because in order to show off their physiques, they would wear skin-tight leotards.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't provide a lot of modesty, so they added an additional layer over their buns and crotchels.
Okay.
when Superman made the switch, I did find it to be odd, and I was racking my brain trying to figure out why, and I know why now. Because when you see a single color following the humanoid form, you assume, even on a subconscious level, that it is their skin.
Okay.
And so, to me, Superman looks naked and blue.
Hmm.
That's how he looks to me. Now, over time, I have gotten used to it and lost that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think, honestly, what would have made me happier is like Superman, like just having different colored pants, just red.
Yeah, maybe that's even fine. I just so glad he got rid of that stupid underwear look.
Yeah.
It's just for the longest time. It bothered me so much.
Like even when you were a kid.
Even when I was a kid, I was just like, "Why would you do that?" I'm like if I tried to do that, I'd get arrested.
That was,
like,
that was his codpiece. That's what was hiding the Kryptonian thunder.
I see. All
right.
He had to keep it back.
Number two.
All right, and no, that was number two.
Hey, number two.
All right, number one. Number one is the most party of all pants. the only pants that can get you thrown out of a mall, and I've seen it happen. Number one goes to tearaway pants. Tearaway pants. Have you ever worn tearaway pants?
Like the kinds that have snap buttons?
Yes.
No.
They're the best of all pants, as they can be quickly and easily removed, which is very fortunate in many situations.
Such as
a spontaneous party erupts wherever you are, and you need to remove them quickly.
I think we party in slightly different manners. It's like, hey, you guys having a birthday party?
I think we party in very similar circumstances. I do not wear tearaway pants. However, I have to show my respect for them and what they represent.
It is truly the idea, the nature, the pathos of tearaway pants.
Correct. Correct.
I respect it.
I just enjoy what they are and what they represent.
Good.
So what are your top three, sir?
Number three. We've been talking about the sexiness of characters and their pants. Mm-hmm. I like the true counterexample, which there's only one I can think of for, you know, a male character given sexy clothing and actually have it work. I give it to Zarbon from Dragon Ball Z.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. For those of you who don't watch Dragon Ball Z, Zarbon is one of the evil Frieza's generals. And Frieza is an entity so powerful that he can literally destroy a planet with a gesture from his finger. So if you're in his upper echelon, you are something special. And Zarbon shows up in full plate alien armor across his chest, pauldrons, the whole getup, and then literally deep blue underwear and thigh-high leg warmers.
True.
And it works. Don't ask me why, but it works.
I think we just don't question it more than anything.
There was plenty about Frieza that we questioned.
That is very true.
Because, you know, from his black lipstick to the fact that in both the American and Japanese versions, it was a female voice actor, but he is expressly a male character. Given the dialogue. Yeah, it's weird. Everything about him is weird. Zarbon, we glossed over. Maybe it was by comparison. Maybe that was the whole idea. We're going to make the craziest, gender-benderiest character possible and then just not talk about it so that they don't mention that Zarbon's in his underoos.
Nice. Maybe. All right, what's number two?
Time pants!
Time pants.
Time pants.
Those sound almost as awesome as tearaway pants.
They're way better, and I can tell you why. In the season 2 Doctor Who Christmas special,
okay,
the doctor produces property master or mistress had obviously done was decked out an Xbox controller. Mm-hmm. And, he was able to produce remote-controlled explosives. And, it was asked of him, how are you carrying all of this stuff? And he was like, my pockets are bigger on the inside. Just like the TARDIS!
Just like the TARDIS.
And the thing is that it's not something that they lost. They stopped talking about it. By the way, I would like everyone at home to know that Jay Riz, without a word, just came through the door and handed me a Firehouse Subs chopped salad.
Sweet.
it's something that they actually reference later on, where he pulls a sword literally from nowhere. Like, he knows he's going to need a sword, so he just pulls one out, and they never talk about it. And I remember J-Riz saying, where the hell did those come from? And I was like, just pockets, they're bigger on the inside. So time pants beat out breakaway pants. J-Riz has now taken my chop salad after, once again, in silence, writing down the total calorie count on a piece of paper in front of me. So now today's Warlock's notes read, 370 calories. Warning, skit, welcome, YouTube, Twitter. Please put it in the fridge. Thank you. So,
okay, what's number one?
Number one? You can't guess it.
Maybe? I don't know. What is it?
Hammer pants!
Oh, you love the parachute pants?
What? There is not... When I think parachute pants, I think pants that are made out of parachute material that go like zik, 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 zik. All right, I'm talking full-on room for 17,000 crotches pants.
Those are pretty sweet.
Where the actual inseam of the pants ends somewhere around the knee level. How can you not? And the more rhinestones, the better, really.
Really? It's true. Actually, the more rhinestones, the more powerful you are on a cosmic scale.
And you, too, will be able to summon the 90s X-Men.
It's true.
I really hope Marvel's listening. And just...
That, just rhinestones the hell out of everything.
That which we hold true on the podcast shall be held in the battle world. Either way, now that we have officially talked about our favorite pants in the universe, I do think it's time to say goodbye, everybody.
Zach, it's done buffering. I'm getting coordinates.
Where is he?
It says the signal came from somewhere in Sector G2B?
Sector G2B. That means that Johnny has returned to his home planet.
Wait, he had a home planet?
Yes. You see, Johnny Dem is not like you or I. He is actually an alien from a distant world. The world of Dimsdale.
Brum, brum, brum.